Welcome to the second season of Reset the Table. Russia's war in Ukraine affects agricultural markets and threatens food security for millions around the world. The UN Food Systems Summit is behind us, and COP27 and the White House Conference on Hunger, Nutrition, and Health are upon us. Join us as we examine solutions to food insecurity challenges around the world and right here at home. Welcome to the show. My guest today is Caroline Smith-DeWall, Deputy Director of Eat Safe at the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition, or GAIN. Prior to joining GAIN, Caroline had a long history of leadership on issues of food safety at the FDA, at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, and at the International Association for Consumer Food Organizations. Caroline is based in Washington, D.C. She recently attended a meeting on issues of food safety in San Diego and is joining us today from Colorado. Caroline, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, Caitlin, and thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast.
Welcome. Caroline, I'd like to start our conversation by centering us in the importance of food safety to food security generally and nutrition specifically. And the reason I want to start here is because when it comes to food security and nutrition, food safety can often be considered an ancillary issue, if not entirely excluded from the conversation. And I'll give an example, which is a conversation that might happen involving someone who works in food security. Someone says, oh, I don't know what that means. Does that mean food safety? And the food security person will say, no, food security is very different from food safety. Tell us why that's wrong.
So food safety is actually quite integral to food security. The World Health Organization estimates that there are 600 million cases of foodborne illness each year and 420,000 deaths. Now, the burden of disease here, though, does not fall uniformly around the globe. In fact, consumers living in developing regions, regions that are emerging into a more modern economies, frequently have much higher levels of foodborne illness than many European or North American consumers. So we really have a disproportionate burden of disease in many of the same countries that we're targeting to address food security issues.
Great, thank you. Now let's talk about nutrition specifically. So what are the ways that food safety is related to malnutrition, and how can unsafe food keep us from reaching our goals regarding global nutrition?
Food safety is frequently caused by a number of agents. So it can be microbial, it can be parasitic, there can be viruses that are causing the diseases. But the bottom line is the food that carries those is not delivering the type of nutrition that the consumers are expecting when they eat it. So a lot of stunting in developing countries can be linked to repeated bouts of foodborne disease, especially among children. So as children are growing, if they are repeatedly exposed to pathogens, many of them may die, but others will have physical effects that can affect them for their life. It lifetime consequences from unsafe food. So it's critically important as we address malnutrition in developing countries that food safety is front and center to help us address that.
Certainly. So what you're saying is that by eating unsafe food, one can contract diseases that prevent proper uptake of nutrients. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Now, you helped lead a very important initiative at the intersection of food safety and nutrition at GAIN called Eat Safe, which is evidence and action towards safe, nutritious food. Can you tell us about Eat Safe?
Sure. Eat Safe is a Feed the Future project funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. It was started in 2019 as a pilot study. USAID is piloting a number of programs looking at food safety as part of their food security mission, their mission to address malnutrition, as well as their resilience mission. And it became really evident during COVID how important addressing traditional markets was in meeting all of these objectives. So EatSafe's focus is really on traditional markets. These are the sometimes open air markets or markets where vendors come, as sometimes they're called informal markets or open air markets. Farmers from the countryside come to these markets and meet consumers very directly. EatSafe is really designed to address food safety in these traditional markets.
Great. That's interesting that the focus is on markets. I think that there might be many other places of potential contamination of food. So why is it that the focus is on markets and not, let's say, on farm production or on food storage and transportation means or things like that? Why is the focus on markets specifically?
It's important that markets be considered in light of the fact that so many consumers actually purchase food in these markets. The markets frequently suffer from a lack of infrastructure. This means they may not have safe water, they may not have effective waste management controls, and they may not even have bathrooms or facilities that can be used in the markets by people who are there all day. So this is critically important that the conditions in the markets be addressed.
Okay. So under EatSafe, I know that you're working in two countries, in Nigeria and Ethiopia. Take us to a market in Nigeria and walk us through what your interventions might be in that market to promote food safety by vendors for the benefit of consumers.
So EatSafe is a pilot study, which means USAID has asked us to test a variety of approaches to addressing food safety in the markets. And our approaches are all focused around giving consumers more information and the tools to choose safer food, and also giving vendors the tools they need and the training to improve their food handling practices. So at EatSafe in Nigeria, we are currently testing a number of interventions. One of them is a safe food stand where consumers can stop by, ask questions, and get information on what things to look for in the market to buy safe food. We also have a brand initiative. So vendors who have been trained on food safety handling have the ability to have a brand that shows consumers in the market that these are trained vendors who are exercising better food safety controls.
That's really interesting. You know, you wrote a piece for us a couple of years ago talking about EatSafe in the context of the importance of food safety to nutrition. And you noted that central to EatSafe's approach is the interaction between consumers and vendors in traditional markets, because it offers a leverage point to empower consumers to demand safe food from vendors. Tell us about that.
In the development area, there's a concept of push and pull. So pushing means that you are providing the tools for the farmers to actually deliver better products. But pulling is the idea that consumer demand, if consumers are asking for changes, that the vendors and market authorities will want to deliver that. Now, we don't know yet how effective the pull mechanism, the consumer demand mechanism will be, but that's exactly what EatSafe was designed to test, is whether consumers in these markets can exercise choice, consumer choice and consumer willingness to buy food that they think is safer. We believe that all consumers want safe food. They wouldn't be buying it or feeding their families something that they thought was unsafe. So we believe the momentum, the motivation that consumers have to seek safe food is there. The question is, will they have the tools within these markets, which have really huge challenges in terms of infrastructure? How will they be able to exercise that choice?
Sure. You said you were testing this pull mechanism. Do you have any information you can share with us?
Not yet. We are working right now in communities, two states in Nigeria and one in Ethiopia. And I like to think of this, Caitlin, as kind of a hyper-local approach, because we are really focused in on these vendors and these consumers to test the model. Once we have those results, which should be in about 2 years' time, USAID will have the information it needs to design more programs for more countries.
Fantastic. And I look forward to seeing the results of this study when they're available. Considering this hyper-local approach, imagine that we're in a market in Nigeria or in Ethiopia, and one vendor is employing food safe practices and a vendor next to them is not. What's the difference between the two?
One primary difference is the vendor's knowledge of how pathogens might spread in the marketplace. Everyone understands, especially post-COVID, the importance of hand washing. Well, hand washing is important to so many things, including preventing the spread of foodborne bacteria. In consumers' own kitchens, if they're handling meat and then handling vegetables that they're going to consume raw, they are risking spreading pathogens from the meat to the vegetables. Well, the same holds true in the market environment. So vendors' knowledge is the first step to addressing it. And then giving vendors the types of tools. So hand washing facilities, again, very important during COVID, also very important in the marketplace every day. Hand washing tools so they don't have to touch the food with their hands, using tongs for handling food, making sure they're not handling money and food at the same time. Yeah. So a lot of very simple steps, but also within the marketplace, the demand that vendors might have and make to the market authorities for better management of waste. Cats and dogs frequent these markets and, you know, keeping the domestic animals and the trash they may leave behind out of the markets is important. So we really see a synergy between consumers who are learning about safer food and how to find it, and vendors who are learning about better practices. And this synergy, we hope, will impact the entire market environment as both consumers and vendors ask for better conditions and better infrastructure.
Certainly. And I imagine it would be a win-win for both, a win for vendors to sell more of their product and a win for consumers to access safer food.
Exactly.
I know that Eat Safe is active in Nigeria and Ethiopia, and I know you work in many other places, and probably informally you do research wherever you travel. You and I were talking recently when I believe you had just returned from Cambodia, and informally you were able to observe some markets there. What did you see? And did you see some food safe or food unsafe practices there?
I went to a number of markets there. I didn't get to like a true wet market, which has a lot of sometimes live birds. Consumers in many countries, especially in Asia, but really all over the world, like to see their fish or their poultry live and choose it before it gets slaughtered. So live markets are very important, as well as markets where meat is arriving freshly slaughtered. Basically, it's meat arrives and then is sold the same day, never sees the cold chain at all. So these are traditional methods of selling. In Cambodia, the markets I went to were not that vibrant. They had a lot of dried goods, a lot of dried fruits and other products that actually can move very well within international trade. So okay. One thing we're looking at as we progress work on traditional markets internationally is like, what is their impact also on international trade and markets?
Okay, well, that's a perfect segue from talking about the local or even the hyper-local, as you were saying, to the global. And I have a piece here that you published in May of 2021 on integrating nutrition and food safety in food systems, policy, and programming. And in this piece, you said that despite the fact that food safety and nutrition are inextricably linked, the connections between food safety and nutrition have been largely lacking from existing frameworks for food systems. Let's talk about what exists at the global level and how you mean to better integrate food safety in global frameworks.
So it's very important to understand the linkages between all aspects of food production, marketing, consumption, and food systems really is a tool to do that. However, the focus frequently of food systems has not really adequately focused on food safety as a core function of food systems. Food safety is something that progresses from the farm all the way to these markets, all the way to consumers' homes. So we really need to think about it all the way through the food system. We've found in many places, and when I work internationally, I frequently work in the context of Codex, the Codex Alimentarius, which is a organization. It's over 50 years old. It is a joint project of the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization, both UN organizations. And they have worked with governments, with countries, for over 50 years on a set of food standards, which are based on science and consensus. And Codex, unfortunately, sometimes the emphasis in Codex is much more on food intended for trade. That can have a really negative impact on domestic food systems. So part of the work we're doing right now is to really educate both countries and people in Codex about the importance of domestic food trade, as well as regional trade and international trade, but making sure that the protections, the systems that are in place to ensure the safety of exports are actually benefiting all consumers in that country.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because when you hear about food safety, it's often in the context of international trade, in the context of sanitary and phytosanitary standards that allow producers to take advantage of international consumers and international trade. But that's very interesting that you're saying that it doesn't necessarily apply to food safety within a country. It's only looking at food for export. So seems like there's potentially a very big gap there.
Yes. And it's something that we really need to make at the center of the table, is making sure that these systems that are working very well for international trade are actually functioning equally effectively for the consumers domestically. That's a big push right now.
Certainly for the benefit of domestic food security and domestic nutrition, for the reasons that we laid out at the very beginning of our conversation.
Exactly right.
You were just in San Diego at a meeting related to Codex. Can you tell us a bit about the atmosphere there?
Yeah. So the Global Alliance for Improved Nutrition, GAIN, is an observer organization in Codex. But Codex is really a meeting of governments. And when I worked at the Food and Drug Administration, for example, I frequently represented and attended Codex meetings on behalf of the U.S. government. So I'm quite familiar with this committee. The Codex Committee for Food Hygiene is one of the oldest committees in Codex. And it really does a very good job at providing governments, all governments, including low and middle income countries, with the type of food safety standards that are effective, which are scientifically based. So it's a really good committee. I worked with a number of countries, five countries actually, over the last 6 months in developing a proposal for the Codex Committee for Food Hygiene to address traditional markets and the food hygiene controls or lack thereof in traditional markets. The discussion behind the scenes at the committee on this proposal on traditional markets was very much around, well, you know, there's not an international trade aspect. But when we got to the discussion in the larger group with all the countries represented, we had support from 14 different countries for advancing work on traditional markets. And the countries pointed out the importance to their consumers. In some regions, the majority of consumers purchase their fresh foods at these markets, so they have a huge impact. But also to their tourist industry, where hotels and other local businesses source their food, as well as there was some evidence that international trade uses these markets. And a really good example here is spices. Many spices come through these types of traditional markets, as well as the fruit that might be frozen or dried and shipped all over the world. We believe traditional markets are a very important focus for the committee. We don't know yet if it will be adopted for work this year. They've got a few other things on the table that they also have to consider, but we're very hopeful to move forward with the work and GAIN, as well as the Global Food Safety Initiative, GFSI, and the Consumer Goods Forum will be working with the governments to assist as needed and provide expertise.
Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. Beyond Codex, let's think of some other international frameworks. It seems like a very, very long time ago, but just over a year ago was the first ever UN Food Systems Summit. Did you have the impression that food safety received the attention that it deserved in the context of those conversations?
We worked very hard. GAIN led one of the major groups that was considering all aspects of food systems, especially around nutrition and food security. And we also had a subgroup working directly on food safety. At the end of the day, I think food safety got a little lost. We didn't have any specific findings or working groups emerging out of it, but there was a lot of momentum. And I think time will tell if we can continue to impact the food systems discussions and elevate food safety as a key aspect of food systems.
Well, I hope we're moving in the right direction with those conversations. It's been my observation that the attention that food safety can get in these conversations is inverse to its importance. It can get relatively little attention, and yet it is absolutely essential to food security and to nutrition. So again, I hope we're moving in the right direction. Let's turn to COP27, which concluded in November. Let's talk about the relationship of climate change to food safety, which is something that it might take folks a little bit to conceptualize, but it seems like there are many direct impacts of climate change on food safety. What are some examples?
Well, I think one of the biggest example is with a very common pathogen that causes both food and waterborne outbreaks. It can be Vibrio cholera, Vibrio non-01 cholera, Vibrio parahemolyticus, Vibrio vulnificus. There's a number of different pathogen strains, but it thrives in warm water. And we've seen evidence of this in the United States, for example, warm waters in certain regions. If you harvest shellfish from those waters, they can carry a deadly pathogen. So we've seen already examples of the food safety impacts. The issue will be, as waters warm around the globe, what is the impact of Vibrios and how will they change? That's actually another issue that was on the table for discussion as new work at the Codex Committee of Food Hygiene, is Vibrio in seafood. So that's one key issue that we're watching. But there's going to be a lot of impacts, just like migration occurs, like trees migrate, believe it or not. There's evidence that, you know, we are seeing different varieties of trees moving as the climate changes, and animals, pathogens will also move. And so okay, we will probably see some hazards show up in areas that, you know, may have been endemic to other regions of the globe and suddenly showing up in new areas. So yeah, we have a lot to look for, to research, but this is clearly an area that needs a lot of attention.
Yeah, with a variety of impacts of climate change potentially contributing to increased incidence of foodborne illness, with, let's say, flooding, for example, if there's an excess of water, that can potentially increase the incidence of transmission of Vibrio, as you're talking about. Or in areas of drought where there's less water access, there's less water to wash hands, wash food, prepare food, and get rid of pathogens. Looking at some work from your colleagues, see that power outages that are related to climate change impacts can affect cold storage.
As climate change impacts occur globally, from flooding to power outages to literally changes in the environment, we may see a lot of opportunity for pathogens to grow and to cause more foodborne illness. The goal of the World Health Organization and many other groups is to reduce the incidence of foodborne illness, but that may be a challenge in the future with climate change on the horizon.
Absolutely. And it seems like GAIN is at the forefront of anticipating these challenges and anticipating ways to respond to them. Can you give us some examples of ways to help consumers and communities respond to the impacts of climate change on food safety?
An example of how GAIN can be very proactive in these areas actually occurred during COVID. We worked very closely with governments, with market authorities, as well as with the World Health Organization to give the markets the type of resources, the type of educational materials, what they would need to help safely have consumers in those markets. So climate change is going to present the same kind of challenge that COVID did. And because we are in many countries in the global South, we have the opportunity to work directly with governments nationally, locally, and internationally to address these challenges.
Thank you. Clearly, at the local and global levels, GAIN is doing fantastic work at the intersection of food safety and nutrition. My last question for you, Caroline, is just a personal question. You are one of the world's foremost experts on food safety and nutrition. You have decades of experience and leadership on these issues, but your background is in political science and law. What led you to food safety?
So, well, this is a lovely question. Thank you. My father was a research pharmacologist, the chairman of pharmacology at the University of Vermont, and I learned at the kitchen table a lot about scientific analysis. And so while I am a lawyer by training, my interest in having a career that really let me marry both law and science, it led me to food safety and also to representing consumers. So I've always been most comfortable when consumers are at the center of my focus. That's why I've spent so many years working for the Center for Science in the Public Interest and GAIN really in the sector where I can focus most effectively on helping consumers avoid foodborne illness, whether they're in America or in Nigeria and Ethiopia and Honduras. I really hope to help more consumers never get an illness because prevention, nobody recognizes prevention. But food safety is all about preventing illnesses.
Yeah. Well, perfect place to conclude our conversation. On behalf of consumers everywhere, thank you very much for the work that you do, Caroline. And thank you for joining us today on our show.
Thank you so much, Caitlin. It's such a pleasure.
That's it for today's episode of Reset the Table. You can subscribe on Apple or Spotify and follow us on Twitter @CSIS Food. Until next time.